The following program is presented by the Far East Broadcasting Company because stories of people living out the gospel with their lives inspire all of us. FEBC, taking Christ to the world through radio and new media. Learn more at febc.org.
I look at my new position as I am investing in the leadership pipeline of the next generation of biblically grounded, passionate, fire-filled leaders that will make a difference around the world.
You'll meet the new president of the Moody Bible Institute on this edition of First Person. Welcome to this week's interview. I'm Wayne Shepherd, and my conversation with Dr. Mark Jobe is just ahead. Each week, we introduce you to people who are serving Christ and His kingdom in some unique way. And as we often say, some of the names of our guests you'll recognize and some you won't, but all have a story to tell of God at work in their life. Telling these stories on First Person is made possible by the Far East Broadcasting Company. FEBC broadcasts the gospel through radio and new media technologies in nearly 50 countries of the world. Learn more about the results at febc.org, the Far East Broadcasting Company, until all have heard. As some of you may know, I spent many years on the broadcasting staff of Moody Radio in Chicago. Since those days, my life continues to intertwine with Moody in many ways, so I was interested in meeting Mark Jobe. Mark is the 10th president in the long and storied history of Moody and brings a renewed sense of purpose and mission. He grew up in Spain as the son of missionaries, and that's where our conversation began.
You know, my father became a believer at the age of about 18 at a Youth for Christ rally. In fact, Wayne, it's interesting because my mother and my father both became believers at the same rally but did not know each other.
Is that right?
And they, years later, found out that it was at the same place, same message.
Where was that?
This was in northern Indiana, Youth for Christ rally,
well,
downtown Gary, Indiana, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And radical conversion, and my dad wanted to do the most radical thing that he could think of. He was inspired by the missionaries that had recently died in the Amazon jungle. So he said, I want to go to the Amazon jungle. Well, he didn't end up in the Amazon jungle, but he ended up as a missionary in Chile, where he would go horseback to these villages in the mountains. I was 6 months old when they left the country. After a few years there, he wanted to go, my parents wanted to go to a more unreached area. So they explored Spain a bit, and we landed in a city of 130,000 people with no Protestant evangelical church at all in the entire city, and none in its history, which is amazing.
Starting from scratch.
Starting from scratch. We literally met in a whitewashed horse stable for the first 5 years, and now there's thousands of believers all over Spain that can trace their roots back to that little horse stable.
Is that right?
In northern Spain.
How do you account for that? I know it's the Lord, but I mean, how humanly do you account for that?
You know, it was really, really slow and really hard in the beginning. I mean, they labored for several years with almost no fruit at all. It was still under Franco at the time, Spain. I remember one of the first converts that came to Christ. He was 16 years old, went back home, told his mother. His mother slapped him in the face and said, I'd rather you be dead than one of those. So my dad and a group of people, they started going up to this little hill that overlooked this city, and they just started praying, God, we don't know what to do. You're going to have to break through. So every morning they'd go out, they would pray, they would ask for a breakthrough. In 1975, Franco died, and it was like the entire country just found a new freedom. They had been quite oppressed in a certain way, and a new openness to the gospel. And literally hundreds of young people started exploring Christianity and coming to Christ, and we were right in the middle of all that. And yeah. I believe it was an answer to prayer.
How old were you? You were during your growing up years then?
Yeah, and I was young. I was I was probably 12, 13 years old when that happened. So
young enough and old enough to know what was going on.
Old enough to know what was going on, and a incredible place. I mean, I was, as a young teenager, in the midst of a small revival where literally hundreds of young people were coming to Jesus, hungry to study the Bible, unchurched, but wanting to grow and meet. And so it was a great environment for me to be in.
But I understand you didn't really want to come to the city of Chicago, did you? I mean, you came here at what, 17, you said?
I did at 17. Someone was sending tapes that they were, remember cassette tapes?
Yes, I do.
So someone was putting their cassette recorder in front of the radio and recording messages from Moody's Founders Week and other radio programs, sending it to my father, writing a little handwritten note, send it to my father. Somehow I got a hold of those cassette tapes and started listening to the messages. Hmm. I didn't know anybody that had ever gone to Moody. I was very unfamiliar with Moody, never been on the campus. But I had really come to Christ at 15, and I said, I want to go at least 1 year to that school in Chicago that teaches the Bible that way. And so at 17, I landed in O'Hare Airport to come to a school in the heart of Chicago.
First impressions?
First impressions, urban jungle, did not like it, noisy, a lot of people. I mean, I was ready to get out of Chicago. I mean, Wayne, I grew up in a town in northern Spain of 200 people. Huh. My phone number was 8. And literally, this little village that we took turns carrying firewood to go to school, and I'm dropped in the heart of this mega city, Chicago. It was definitely culture shock.
By the way, your mom is still in Spain?
My mom is 81 years old. She lives in northern Spain. What an awesome woman. She's my secret weapon because she walks 4 miles every day and she prays.
Oh, boy.
And I'm on the top of her prayer list.
Yeah. How often do you get to see her?
You know, we've been going to Spain for the last so many years. Every summer we try to go over there and at least spend a couple weeks with her.
Well, after that rough introduction to Chicago, you came, of course, as a student at Moody and graduated from Moody. Pick up the story there. What happened after Moody?
So I couldn't wait to get out of the city. While I was a student at Moody, a pastor told me, I know you want to go back to Europe. They told me, the nations have come to the city. If we can reach the cities, we can reach the world. And he challenged me, why don't you plant a church in Chicago first? I wanted to say, get thee behind me, Satan. I didn't want to hear that. I wanted to get out of here. But it was one of those seeds that I just couldn't shake. I just couldn't shake. And so through a series of different divine circumstances, at the age of 21, I found myself walking up the steps of a little church on the southwest side of Chicago, back of the yards neighborhood, gang-ridden neighborhood, drug dealers on the corner, the church kind of falling apart, and stepping in to be the pastor of about 18 people.
And that led to?
So I did what, you know, I remember my first day, Wayne, stepping up and sitting in the empty church building, opening up my Bible and saying, now what do I do? I mean, I was 21, wasn't from the city, but I did what I have a passion to do. I've always had a heart for evangelism. And so I got out in the streets and started sharing Jesus with whoever would listen.
Hmm.
And amazingly, people started coming to Christ. And that little church started, it was a rough, tumble group of people. I mean, these were very unchurched people. You didn't want to run into our ushers. Let's just say this.
You know, they
don't cross our ushers. One guy walked into the little church and he looked at our usher and he said, hey, last time I saw you, you had a sawed-off shotgun pointed at my head.
Oh.
And he said, hey, those were my BC days.
Before Christ.
Before Christ. And so that little group of people started to grow and grow and grow. And now it's turned into the ministry that we call New Life Community Church in Chicago.
Yeah, and multiple campuses throughout the Chicago city and surrounding area. True?
Yes. So that little group grew. And now we are at 27 different locations around Chicago. We have 44 worship services on Sunday, ministered to about 7,000 people, and have a great team of, it's a very multicultural church, a lot of first-generation believers. We've led to Christ, baptized in the last 3 years about 1,200 people. It's such a fun place to be a part of.
And you're not leaving the church to become president at Moody. You're still there, right?
I'm still there. And, you know, that was one of the non-negotiables for me. I told the board, I will be a much better president if I have my hands involved in ministry in Chicago.
Well, we asked the students to do that.
Exactly. And so I'm a volunteer pastor now. I've transitioned. I'm bivocational. Let's say that.
Okay,
I'm bivocational.
How about that?
So, but you know, Moody, the whole heart of Moody is to train people to do exactly what I've been involved in doing for a long time. And so I felt like I can do it better if I'm still doing it myself.
We'll continue meeting the new president of the Moody Bible Institute coming up on this edition of First Person.
Listening to your station is my first priority when I get home. Sometimes I even listen twice. First on the radio and then through the internet. Thank you for all your hard work.
The Far East Broadcasting Company receives millions of responses each year from grateful listeners. FEBC is dedicated to taking Christ to the world through radio and new media. To learn more, please visit febc.org. That's febc.org. The Far East Broadcasting Company, until all have heard. My guest is Dr. Mark Jobe, who is the new president, the 10th president of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, a place there I served Christ for many, many years and still am closely associated with. Actually, Mark, you and I are hosting a new radio program together. It's your program. I'm co-hosting. But
oh, I'm so excited about this program. And I'm so excited to do it with you, Wayne,
well,
really.
Likewise. It's a real privilege and honor to serve you and serve Christ through the program. We heard some of your story, but I didn't ask you when your faith became your own. You had these wonderful parents, of course, who were committed to the gospel, followed Christ, a great sacrifice. But when did it become your faith, Mark?
I was 15 years old, a sophomore in high school, grown up in the church, saw the authenticity in my family, but God doesn't have grandchildren,
no.
Only children. And at 15 years old, I knelt in the basement of my grandmother's house, and I said, God, I've known the gospel, but I need to surrender. And so at 15, I surrendered my life to Jesus Christ in the basement of my grandmother's house, and I knew then I was making a huge decision and my life would never be the same.
Mm. Mom and Dad had to be very happy.
Oh, yeah. You know, the thing about my parents is they always lived not perfect lives, but they were always authentic. Mm. I never had this desire to rebel against it because I felt like I was seeing something that was real, something that was authentic, something that made me want to say, hey, I want that too.
Yeah. Let's talk about your vision. You have been placed into a remarkable place of leadership now, president at Moody. What's your vision, not only for Moody, but for this generation?
You know, it was a big decision because I was super engaged in planting churches, leading people to Christ. And so when Moody said, would you consider this? My first reaction was probably not. I love Moody, but I don't think I want to lead Moody. But Dee and I, as we fasted and prayed, felt a sense that, hey, I'll give you clarity in the process. What attracted me to saying yes to this opportunity is that I have a real passion for this unchurched, more and more secularized generation of people that know very little about Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I've been throwing my heart and energy into reaching this sort of secular world. I spend a lot of time with unchurched people, unsaved people. That's my world.
I remember John Stott years ago saying, if our only friends are Christians, we failed.
Yes. And I have the opportunity to be in a very unchurched world and talk to people that know nothing about the Bible and preach to a group of people that I know every time I preach, there's people there that this is their first experience in a Christian church. And so what drew me to this opportunity here at Moody is the idea that I have the incredible privilege of being able to shape and speak into the hearts of a generation of young people here that really come from all over the world and are going out to all over the world.
I rode the elevator this morning with a young woman from Malaysia.
Yeah,
who's
exactly.
Studying at Moody.
Oh, I've met so many international students that have traveled. Yesterday, I met some people from France, from Hong Kong. Today, I met someone from Algeria. I mean, it is people from all over the world coming, getting saturated with the gospel, and in creative entrepreneurial ways, the same message, but being creative at reaching this generation for Christ. We have the greatest opportunities, I think, than any generation before us. However, some of the greatest challenges than any generation before
us. What are some of those challenges?
You know, the world has become, our world, America, has become much more secularized. We live in a global world where people are influenced now through media like never before. We live in a very polarized world, especially in America,
yes,
where politics oftentimes has sort of sabotaged some of the conversation about Christianity that we have. I've been pastor for a long time. I've never seen the aggressiveness that I see now in some unchurched people. Before it was like, it doesn't matter. Now
aggressiveness turned
towards Christianity in a negative way, almost like if you're a Christian, that means you hate me.
Yeah.
There's always been segments, and I've pastored in some tough areas in Chicago, but now it feels like I'm seeing a generation that it's an insult to them if they believe you're a Christian. Like immediately they're charged up against you. And I think that we live in a generation that we have to overcome some things that previous generations did not have to overcome in reaching people for Jesus.
So how do we overcome it? I mean, you're the parent of some people in their teens and early 20s.
I do. And I think it's always been the same, Wayne. I think it's always been the same. I think we communicate a clear message that points to Jesus, but it's got to be saturated in love and grace.
And acceptance.
Exactly.
Even though there are differences, acceptance.
Absolutely. For example, I pastored in the Lakeview neighborhood, which is the highest concentration of gays and lesbians in the entire state of Illinois, and would get questions all the time. When the gay pride parade marched right in front of our church, we didn't go out there with signs condemning or hating. We actually got a bunch of water bottles on hot July day that it was going, and with little stickers that said "Thirsty, try Jesus," and just tried to love on some people. And I had so many incredible conversations from a community of people that would normally be aggressively against the church.
Yeah, literally a cup of cold water.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you miss about the pastorate? Being a pastor. I know you're still going to volunteer as that bivocational pastor, but you've got a lot of responsibility at Moody now, too.
I do have a lot of responsibility. And I think what I want to make sure that doesn't happen, a place like Moody, obviously people have come to study. They're Christians. And I just want to make sure that, like for years I've done, that I'm in the midst of the unchurched secular world as well, because I don't want to lose touch with the people that I'm really trying to reach.
Right. You mentioned earlier how the world has shrunk in a sense. Those weren't your words, but it's a global world that we live in now. You've traveled extensively. What have you learned through travel and through interaction with the church and non-believers in other places?
Yeah, I do travel a lot. I was just in Spain a couple of weeks ago speaking at a men's conference, and we've planted overseas in the last couple of years 9 churches, and so it's taken me to New Zealand, to South America, all over. And a couple of things that I realize, that although we here in America have so much material and resources, sometimes we lack the fire and passion and dedication that I see in some countries that have a lot less resources. If we can combine the passion and dedication with some of the resources that we have, we would have a powerful, powerful combination. And so my 19-year-old son just took 6 months, and he was in Australia. He was in Mozambique, Africa, sleeping in a tent with no running water, didn't take a shower for 3 weeks in Nepal, was proud of it too. But he came back really with a new sense of how privileged we are, and we really need to do something about what's happening around the world. And it always strikes me, we have so much in this country. How can we leverage that for kingdom advancement?
Yeah. As we travel, I'm sure you've had this happen too. You realize that you're not there to give answers. You're there to listen. And they have so much to teach us in these other lands, don't they? I mean, the church is growing so much more rapidly in other parts of the world than it is here at home.
Absolutely. You know, many of these countries look to Americans and want to learn. I mean, they hear you're an American, sure, and they just kind of feel like, hey, we want to learn from you, and they put you on sometimes on a pedestal. However, I agree. I want to sit at the feet of those that are multiplying and making disciples and learn from them.
We can encourage them, but we can learn from them. We need to go with the attitude of learning.
Absolutely.
That's one thing I've brought back from traveling in a few places around the world.
There are some amazing things happen, and hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of people coming to Christ of names that are hard to pronounce, mm-hmm, and that you and I will never know about because they're not famous in our circles, social media, but they are heroes.
Yeah.
Heroes of the gospel.
No question about that. So where is this all taking you personally? I mean, you've got a new lease, so to speak, on life as the new president at Moody. Where's it going for you, Mark?
You know, my vision and my mission hasn't changed, but my position to accomplish that mission and vision has. For years, I've had a heart for cities around the world, for evangelism, and a special heart for cities. And I started praying a long time ago, God, what if you would give us the capacity to reach 1% of the mega cities around the world? And what if we were able to virally multiply life-giving, gospel-preaching churches around the world? And I've been praying for that for a long time. I've been praying for that in Chicago.
Yeah.
That led me to do a multi-site church. I've been praying that for other cities. And so my approach, as I look at this challenge, the greatest challenge is a leadership pipeline. And so I look at my new position as, hey, I am investing in the leadership pipeline of the next generation of biblically grounded, theologically sound, passionate, fire-filled leaders that will make a difference around the world.
It's a very strategic place to be, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. In the heart of the city. That's what I love. In fact, D.L. Moody was passionate about evangelism, but also passionate about cities. And he talked about the cities being the greatest, highest point out of which the river flows. And if we can reach the cities, we can reach the world.
How can we pray for you and Dee, your wife?
I've been telling people to pray for God's favor on us. What Dee and I are really asking for is we want to be in a position of favor where God is pleased with what we do and how we operate, our heart, our decision-making. And so we've just been praying, God, give us an extra measure of grace and favor for this season in our life.
That's Dr. Mark Jobe, the newly appointed president of the Moody Bible Institute. I do encourage you to pray for this man and those around him as they lead Moody in a new season of ministry to this generation. We'll place links with just a bit more about Mark at our website, firstpersoninterview.com. In a couple of weeks, we'll be telling you more about current events in the countries where the Far East Broadcasting Company broadcasts its programs, places like China, where the persecution of Christians is increasing. In the meantime, please visit febc.org to learn more and view videos of FEBC's reach into difficult closed areas. These are critical days for keeping the doors to the gospel open. Visit febc.org. Now, with thanks to my friend and producer Joe Carlson, I'm Wayne Shepherd. Join us next time for First Person.